From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Digital Podcast. Ryan Spears is our guest today. We're talking editing, but we're also talking a little, you know, history of above average and working inside the Broadway video family of companies, because Ryan is somebody who has been inside of that ecosystem for years as an assistant editor, as an editor, as a post supervisor, now back to sort of like freelance assistant editing. We go through his whole journey from SNL to above average and back again and all the great work that he's done there. So excited to sort of track along with him where he has developed as an editor and as a creative. So exciting conversation. We touch on some of his new work back in the freelance game due to some changes at Above Average, which we dip into a little bit, and also his expansion into some directing work as well. So really fun conversation and a great time and a good buddy to sit down and chat with us. Sophie Elkezian's here too. Hey, Sophie.
Hello.
I'm pronouncing your name correctly now.
Yep, you did it.
You off
only
air.
Took me 2 months to correct my boss on pronouncing my name.
Oh my God. You know, I'm embarrassed by it. So we should go back and punch into all those old episodes.
I mean, I'm embarrassed because I'm just like, I'm so used to people mispronouncing it, it doesn't even faze me.
Well, Sophie Elkezian, I'll get it right from now on. How you doing, Sophie?
Good. I'm doing good.
We just, as of this taping, and for those out there in the world too, we just did a live stream of our Maker Book Club yesterday as of this recording.
So fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We will have that episode here on the podcast feed next week. So if you are still reading the book, The Real Truth by Reed Martin, next week is our book club episode. We hope you'll tune in for that. And we're already starting to think about what's the next book we want to do.
Yeah.
The one qualification? It's got to be short.
It's got to be short.
We're going to do a nice short book next time.
Yeah.
But a very fun project. I thought it was fun to do. We sat down. We had a little whiskey. We drank a Bronx beer. It was a good old time.
It was so fun. I think we all went into it thinking, oh, I don't know if I'll have enough to say. And then I think we all left with like more than enough to say.
That's part of what the whiskey does.
Yeah,
right?
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, by the time you're done, you've got a lot to say.
And
you know
your
what
face
I mean?
Is red as a tomato in my case.
Yeah, but it was a super fun time. Thanks to those who tuned into that. And I hope that you'll also check out the episode in podcast format next week if you missed it. Speaking of live streams, we've been having a lot of fun here. We're UCB doing live stream content. We just did three this week. So
yeah.
we're banging out some live streams on Facebook.com/UCB Comedy pretty much every day. Today we just did a fun one that was called Your Comments the Play, which I thought it worked better than I was, you know, even hoping that it would. I thought that concept worked really great.
It was really fun. I think people are really excited to have their... I think people just love, in live stream format, having their voices kind of heard and also, like, said back to them. Like,
yes.
Thank you, X person, for this comment.
No, absolutely. I mean, and it's also been really fun to sort of start to craft comedy ideas that have that sort of requisite participation element.
Yeah.
Because I think that when you're at a live show in a theater setting, sometimes... that audience interaction is where there's like an X factor that not every performer and not every audience member is comfortable with. You know? I know that like my wife used to never want to come to improv shows because she would be like, I don't want to get pulled up on stage. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
But like she would always be reticent to sit, you know, too close because she was, even though she knew that, she was afraid it was going to happen.
Yeah, it takes the anxiety out of crowd work,
yeah,
for sure.
But in this format, it's such a fun thing because it's like, it's necessary. You got to keep people involved,
yep.
And that it also like, as a performer, it's more fun when there's an X factor that like, they're not going to heckle you, or if they are, they're doing it via texting. So it's like, doesn't feel that threatening.
Yeah.
But it's also like a really fun way to sort of like add some juice and some life into the show. So
and also commenters make friends with each other, which is very funny.
No, it's great.
It's like, oh, that person's bouncing off of that person and they don't know each other.
That's right. Building community.
Yeah,
lovely.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So every Wednesday at 2, we're doing a live show. Right now, we also have our Ballers Deep Ballers Recap Show Mondays at 12. So Facebook.com/UCB Comedy for new stuff coming out there all the time. Next week. Spoiler, especially this isn't going to be out by then, but the spoiler is we're going to have some people who are kind of stoned on next week's live stream.
Oh, boy.
So that'll be very fun.
Wait, so when
them.
This comes out, this will actually have happened yesterday?
No, it'll be the next day.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this on release day, you can still participate.
Yes.
with some people who are stoned on the Facebook feed the next day, Wednesday at 2. So hope you check that out. Of course, on this show, we're all about talking to filmmakers about their craft and their work. Our project, The Career Tracker, still yet to be sponsored. But I still say that Domino's Pizza, if you are listening, and we know that you are big fans, we think that The Career Tracker is a great sponsorship opportunity for you to get involved with this show and the community that we're fostering. But our Career Tracker project comes back in a couple of weeks. Excited to check in with our makers and see where they're at as the summer comes to a close. You and I were talking, little yeah. spoiler, we saw that Marla... one of our career trackers got up and told stories at the Moth in L.A.
Yes, she did.
So we're excited to hear about that because we saw her post it on social media. So it must be public, right?
Yeah, I can't wait. And I really hope that it was about this dog sled team that
yes,
she grew up
yes,
with.
Yes, yeah, development of
so
that
cool.
one-woman show.
Yeah.
So excited to check back with them. All of our filmmakers are coming back for week number 21. I can't believe it's been 21 weeks.
I know.
And if you haven't caught up with those episodes, they're on the feed in our previous episodes. We're checking in with them every 7 weeks about their career path and what they're working on, kind of like that 7-Up documentary series, which you and I also discovered you're also a big fan of.
Oh, right? I love that. Yeah, listeners, if you haven't watched the 7-Up series, oh my God, it's perfect. It's
yeah,
magic.
It's so great. But also lazy because he does it every 7 years. We're doing it every 7 weeks.
Yeah, we're like, yeah, we work harder than him.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So excited for that. That episode's coming up in a couple of weeks as we round the corner into week 21. Excited to check in with those folks. We've also got so many fun guests coming up on the show. We've been banking a lot of episodes this summer. Former artistic director and longtime buddy Nate Dern is going to be on the show talking about his new book. So excited to chat with him. We're actually, if you did follow along with the Maker Book Club, the week after next, we're airing an episode that's a case study of independent filmmaking as it relates to the lessons we learned in that book. So a fun extension of that. Banking a lot of episodes and making new friends. And we hope that you're out there enjoying the show as well. All right, let's jump into today's episode. Our guest, Ryan Spears. Really excited to sit down and chat with him about his experience as an editor. Ryan started off his career, as we talk about, in the Broadway video family. And was in the right place at the right time when Above Average was born. I think he said he was employee number 4, if I'm remembering right, Sophie.
Yeah, it was number 4. I think it was number 4.
It was a very low number.
Yeah.
But he was there from the beginning at Above Average, so excited to talk to him about those days and his development as somebody who was young and it was his first job, and he got a lot of opportunities that built off of it. And he's at this point, he's built a really great resume as a comedy and digital comedy editor. Now that 6 years have gone by and he's sort of moved up in that space, and some changes happened organizationally there, which we touch on a little bit in the interview, he's now back out in the freelance world and working as an editor and trying to do some directing. And actually is back even at Broadway Video. He left his full-time job and he's even back there on the SNL side doing some work there as well right now. So excited to sort of chat with him about that journey and that development. Fair warning to listeners. There's some gear talk in here.
There's gear talk.
There is. We dig into some of the more granular aspects of running an editing department. But I don't know. I was curious about it. So I followed up and Sophie, I guess it was interesting.
You know, I left
to keep
it
in.
Yeah, I left it in for the people who might find it interesting. If you're like me, you know, just hit that 15 second forward button.
We're encouraging people to hit the 15 second button. Oh, man.
Just yeah. smash that button.
We should put a little alert sound in there. That's like.
Just like a snore. No,
or just like how much time they should hit. Like hit yeah. the button 4 times right now.
Yeah, yeah.
but we hope that you'll listen to all of it. And it is interesting, especially if you're working in editing and you are a maker and a creator in this way. So hopefully you do find it beneficial to your work. Really excited to sit down and chat with him. And as always, we did it while also sipping a delicious Bronx beer. It's a summer of Bronx here at the UCB Digital Podcast. And we had the Belgian-style pale ale, a delicious South Bronx take on a Belgian classic as we chatted. European malts and candied sugar provide the backdrop for 3 distinct strains of yeast in a complex BPA with a range of subtle flavors like bubblegum, tangerines, smoky cloves, and even bananas. A delicious beer.
Dang.
Delicious beer to catch up with on a hot summer day, a beautiful beer to have, and we hope that you'll drink a Bronx the next time you see one out in the world or at the UCB East Bar. The Bronx is anywhere that there is good beer, Bronx is there. That's how you know it's a good beer place.
That's how you know.
That's how you know. And you can find information about their whole selection of craft beers at thebronxbrewery.com. Thanks to them for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. All right, let's dig into it. Our conversation with editor Ryan Spears. Well, Ryan, cheers.
Cheers.
It's been a little while since I saw you, man.
Yeah, it's been a couple months. I think I saw you back in back at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Came here.
You've been transitioning from that full-time life to the back to the freelance world after 6 years, right?
Yeah. Well, back to the freelance world for the first time.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. I pretty much was with like the Broadway Video family for six years after
okay.
I graduated. And this is kind of the first time I've kind of been like out on my own. It's been going pretty well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you about that and the stuff that you're working on now. To go back sort of like in time. So like that was your first job. You went to film school, right?
Yeah. So I went to NYU here, the film program. I graduated in 2011, and I spent a lot of time doing a bunch of, like, internships and stuff while I was in school. So my senior year, I was an intern on SNL in the post-production department.
Nice.
And through that, I kind of made some connections. And that summer, Broadway Video, which is sort of a separate, like, company that owns the rights to SNL, has a post-production facility where they do a lot of for-hire work for a bunch of different projects. And they were looking for a new assistant editor, and I interviewed for that and got in there and was there for about a year. That was a really awesome experience to kind of get in at that level and to be around a bunch of really experienced both assistant editors and actual editors. And I got to work on a bunch of cool projects as an assistant while I was there.
So you sort of got into that Broadway Video family right out of school.
Yep.
And I assume at that time you're pursuing editing pretty hard. I know right now you're doing a little bit more of trying to do some directing and sort of branch out from just the editor's chair, right? At that time, was editing something that you were like trying to get into hard, and what kind of opportunities were you looking for that landed you there?
I think it was kind of similar to where I am now. For me, editing has always been something that I've been passionate about and have taken to pretty quickly.
Sure.
And I went to film school, and one thing that kind of like I always had in the back of my head was that I wanted to focus on something that I could do as like a job on a regular basis because film school is expensive and New York City is expensive, and editing was kind of the natural path for me with that. So editing was something that I enjoyed a lot and looked for as kind of like a career opportunity, while I can also do directing and a little bit of writing and things I like to do on the side. So while I was at Broadway Video, I kind of had some other things going on as well.
Yeah.
But I was definitely into kind of like learning as much as I could to be an editor and to kind of focus on like growing as an editor and taking in as much as I could from all the talented editors there.
At that time, were they an Avid only house, or what were they doing?
Yeah, they will.
This was before 2011. Is before the premiere takeover, right?
Yeah. So it's funny. I learned on Avid in high school and in college, and that was the only thing I used for like my entire school career.
Really? You did Avid in high school?
Yeah.
Wow.
We had like a program, like a news kind of program at my school, and they used a bunch of like Avid news cutters for that.
Oh, okay.
So it was like the basic version of Avid, but
yep.
I learned on that. And I actually didn't really learn Final Cut till I started working at Broadway Video. And they were doing both Avid and Final Cut because a lot of the projects that they did, they had a bunch of projects that they would edit completely in-house. And then they did a lot of projects where they were doing kind of like the online edit for them.
Okay.
Like one was like Ghost Adventures would always do online edits there. So the production crew would do the edits for that just on a couple like laptops in their production office and kind of do the rough edits of it. And then they bring it to Broadway Video and do all the graphics and do all the onlining. So, like, that was a Final Cut project. But then they would do, like, ad work or work for, like, NBC, and that was all Avid because it all kind of, like, started in-house. So they had a much stronger Avid setup, you know, interplay and everything.
Yeah,
so they kind of worked up Avid for that.
And so you're in that family, and you're sort of learning about the kind of projects they're taking on, which are probably bigger, more traditional media in commercial or television space. No feature films out of that office.
None while I was there. Yeah. I think occasionally they've kind of done a couple over the years. Yeah. Like, I think they did like Brain Candy there.
Right.
But they didn't really do any while I was there.
Okay. But, and you're sort of in position then as Above Average gets going to be part of the team that's like, hey, I'm available. I'm a junior person inside your organization.
Yeah.
I'm cool to work on digital. I like comedy. Is it that sort of opportunity that moves you over there? Or what was the opportunity pipeline from an AE in a, you know, traditional TV environment to the kind of team that was getting started at Above Average?
Yeah, I mean, for me, one of the biggest motivations behind my choices in production has always been doing comedy work. So when I heard Above Average was getting off the ground, I was very enthusiastic about that. And I was coming off of, I had worked as an assistant editor on the first season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee when that was at Broadway Video. I think it's still there, does post there. And they were starting up Above Average, and Todd Bieber was directing one of the first series for Above Average that was... what was it again? It was the one with Neil Casey and...
Neil Casey was like in drag? Is that what
it was?
Yeah.
It was like Bell and Bernice Living in the City. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. And I edited that with Todd, and they were impressed by my work with Above Average, and they were looking for someone... You know, it's all web stuff, so they kind of wanted someone young and someone who's kind of like web savvy, and so they brought me on as like... employee number 8. I mean, I think I started before they even had like an official office or anything like that. My first couple of weeks were kind of like holed up in like a back room at 30 Rock for like 2 weeks before they moved back over to 1619, where most of the Broadway Video offices are.
So, I mean, that's the original generation. I'd totally forgotten about that series. But that was like the same time that they were doing like, there was John Lutz had a show that was like him as a bellhop, right?
Yeah, that was...
It was like that first batch of things that they... It was a lot of revolving door sketch series, which is what you guys were doing for a long time. But like at that time, it was like, damn, this is good. You know, I mean, this is a good batch of stuff. And it sort of made a little stink. Right?
Yeah. I mean, like I went straight from Belle and Bernice to Sidecar with Bobby Moynihan. And Chris Gethard was in that, and Anthony Atamanik.
Yeah.
And like they shot at, I think it was like Flanagan's or whatever, that like Irish bar.
I thought they shot that at McManus.
Maybe it was McManus.
I feel like they shot it at McManus.
It was some like Irish bar for sure. Yeah. And they would like, it was like a fun series to work on. And I got to like work directly like with Bobby a couple times on that. So it was a great opportunity. Like right out of the gate, I was working on these awesome projects like directly with a lot of like really awesome UCB talent and a bunch of really awesome like SNL talent as well. Because it was kind of conduit for SNL people to do their projects on the side without having to go out and do it somewhere else.
So, yeah, and just to track that opportunity, so you're put in position there to sort of like try it out while it's in its real infancy. The first batch is like, there's no track record here. There's no process here. It's sort of getting it going.
Yeah.
And here's somebody who's got some skills and probably is working for a rate that is more like a digital rate, I assume, too, right?
Yeah.
And you're sort of like growing. You're able to sort of get in there and then grow with the organization as it grows.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was editor number one with them. You asked about whether or not we were cutting on Avid or Final Cut at Broadway Video. When I jumped over to Above Average, like that was right when Final Cut 10 came out. So I made the push to move over to Premiere, which is what they're still based on now. So I kind of led the charge in getting stuff running on Premiere. And over time, kind of built out the post-production department with like a server and had it set up so we could have like multiple editors working on the same projects at the same time. And I got to grow and do a bunch of really cool projects with them as well. I mean, I eventually got to do a lot of like branded content, which has, you know, more stakes involved. And I got to work on like a series like Hudson Valley Ballers, which to me, still is like one of my favorite projects that I got to work on there because I was both an editor and sort of a post-production supervisor on that. So I got to work directly with Paul Appel and James Anderson.
Nice.
And Silas Howard, who has directed several episodes of Transparent and has done a bunch of other awesome stuff recently. And it felt like that felt like such an awesome collaborative experience because I got to like work directly with them, and they would like I could do things with the edit that they were very into, which was really exciting to work with people of such caliber and get to like have their like stamp of approval on some like ideas that I would have.
Yeah, I'm curious too because like it's funny like when you're doing projects like independently. There is a lack, I find, a lot of times. Like, a lot of times people don't have to be concerned with the way that they're structuring even their project in the edit, the media management in the edit. Let's go down this rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. You ready?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because I'm curious because that was the place. When I came into this place, I was on the post-production side, and it was getting it up and running from a place where Todd, who was here at that time, was running it very much just like him and Julie, but Julie wasn't in the post-production environment at all. And so you had a bunch of scattered hard drives because Todd was just doing it project per project and a la carte. And when we got serious about production, it was like, oh, we need a system to develop in how the workflow is going to work so that multiple editors can work. So that we aren't losing media after a project ends and then have to find it 6 months later because a client goes, hey, actually, I need this. And you're like, fuck, that's in my contract that I have to be able to do it. So you have to organize that stuff. What was that process like for you guys to go from your editor number one, employee number eight, to four editors at a time? What systems did you develop there?
Oh, man, this can get real nerdy real fast.
I fucking love it, man. I love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I started out on, like, a Mac with, like, a Pegasus RAID array, and which was great because it's, like, everything was all backed up there, and it's big enough that we could store all of our projects on there as they came in, and we got some technical input from the post team at SNL at the time for what to do for backups, and we immediately started doing backups to, like, LTO tapes, if anyone knows what those are. And
you're doing tape backups?
Yeah, tape backups, because they're shelf-stable a lot longer than a disk drive is. And it was projects that, like, we were archiving, so it's like if we needed to restore them, we could take the time to restore them. You can't just automatically just, like, start working on them again.
Yeah.
But you put a tape on a shelf, it'll last, like, 20 years. A disk drive, you could pull off the shelf in 7 years, and, like, just if the platters are screwed up, like, you can't get it to work again.
Sure.
So, you know, we were doing tape stuff. It's also cheaper, too. Like, a 1.5 terabyte tape costs, like, $30. Hmm. So we started doing tape stuff, and then over time we added a second editor. And at that point we were kind of, like, passing drives back and forth because we just didn't have the money to invest in, like, a server at that point. And then about two or three years into it, we made a move, an office move. We moved from one location to another. So we were putting some extra money into the post-production facility and everything like that. And it was like, we need to set up, like, a server because we just have so many projects coming through. Like, we're just losing track of media by just, like, passing drives back and forth. And if we're going to operate as a business, like, you can't lose track of that media. Like, you can't. You know, you can't spend, like, you know, a budget on a video, turn around, and then, like, a week later, you lost the whole thing because a drive, like, disappeared, or you had it on one drive and a platter, like, broke. So I pushed to try and have, like, a server installed so we could, like, work simultaneously on projects. The whole server is, like, a RAID server, so everything was, like, if one drive went down, you just put a new one in, and we just kept doing LTO backups. So there's just, like, a massive, like, 100-tape archive at above average now. There's, like, all these LTO tapes that has all the history on it. So if they ever need to get something back again, it's there. And it's all, like, saved by the file. So you can just, like, look for it in the LTO management software.
That's really cool. And with the server you're talking about, is that a data backup server or is that an active editing server? Was that, like, a Premiere Pro edit server?
It's an active editing server. We looked into a couple different, like, editing server manufacturers, which, like, those are really expensive. But we found out about this guy who works out of Orlando. His name is Bob Zellin. And what he does is, like, those servers that, like, video editing servers are, or the way that those video editing servers are set up, there's nothing really particularly like special that you can't just like build yourself. A lot of it's like in the software management side, but because we were doing our own projects, like we could just operate it off of like a Finder. We didn't have to worry about like a client's coming in, they want 50 gigs of like storage or like, or I mean 500 gigs or something like that. Like it was just all on the Finder. It's just a high speed SAN basically. So we set up a high speed SAN and like we can all, you know, you can't, it's, you have to, with Premiere, it's like there's no project management. So it's like if you were going to work on something at the same time, you have to make a copy, but you could work off the same media. And we had like, I think, when we had up to like four systems set up on it that could run like solid 1080p, maybe a little bit of 4K. And then a bunch of other people in the office, like producers, could just access it just to kind of like review playback and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Let me compare it. Like, that's actually interesting because it also sounds like you're benefiting from the sort of like, look, I say here, because this organization, it's like we don't have that infrastructure of Broadway Video to like lean on. It's like it's nice to have rich parents in a way, right? It's nice to have people who are working in the more higher, you know, higher budget level stuff. So when you're doing digital stuff, you can sort of lean on some of those resources and expertise and also like be building something that's going up. Let me compare it to the system we have here.
Yeah.
We're literally making like clone drives. So, like, exact duplicates that have to be managed manually, but, like, calling it the same, calling the hard drives the same names that all the root everything tracks, using, like, Creative Cloud, shared Creative Cloud folders to back up assets and project files between systems, and then dumping off to, like, a Drobo to, like, archive it, which I know isn't forever, but, like, it's incredibly affordable comparatively.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it's amazing once you start adding everything up how much of a beast it can get to manage all that. And, I mean, there was a time that I literally was barely even editing at above average because I was spending so much time trying to manage all those assets and make sure that everything was safe, everything was backed up. Eventually, we brought on, like, a full-time post-production supervisor and we brought on, like, a full-time IT person. But I was kind of serving that role for a while and, like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely an important part of your workflow. I mean, you never want to, like, shoot something or complete a project and, you know, deliver it but then have all your assets just, like, disappear and you can't ever go back to try and like get that again or use it for another project. I mean, there were a lot of times where, especially the way that Above Average worked, where a lot of the series that we would make were also kind of like backdoor pitches, I guess, in a way. Like they were kind of set up to be like, we'll make a series and then maybe like a year down the road, we'll like go try and pitch this to like networks and see if they want to make it into like a TV show. So it's like that stuff needs to come back at some point. And so we would have to make sure that it was still there so they could make a new sizzle reel from like the original media to go pitch it to a network.
Yeah. No, that all makes sense. So you're there and you're seeing the first build of Above Average. It feels like there's been a few phases of that place, right? There was almost like that first phase where you were taking on a lot of partner content. And yes, and then starting to produce some stuff. And then there was like really like the destination website phase where it felt like you were somewhat mimicking what College Humor was building with their cast and everything. And now there's the new phase, which obviously you can't speak to. But I guess like in terms of that for you from a growth perspective, right? Like what was your sort of like role and what was the environment like and the growth like for you creatively and as an editor and I guess a post-supervisor as those phases of Above Average evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for like the first phase of Above Average, which was more of the like channel partner YouTube centric kind of phase, a lot of it was I was just kind of working very directly with the outside content creators that we were bringing on to work on these projects. You know, I mean, like working with like Todd Bieber on different projects, like he wasn't a full-time Above Average employee, but I would work directly with him a lot on whatever projects we were working on. So I was kind of like more serving the creative clients that we were kind of hiring to do these projects. And at that point too, I think there was like, it was kind of just like throwing a bunch of different ideas at the wall. So there was a lot less kind of like a notes process in those as well. It was just kind of like, okay, great. We like the work that, you know, these artists have done before. Well, let's just, like, give them some money to do something that they think is great. You know, as long as, like, they're not, like, nude in it or anything like that, or they're not, like, breaking any kind of, like, you know, rules that would hurt our views YouTube-wise, we'll go with it. And then over time, with the creation of kind of like the destination website, it became a little bit more about kind of like building a brand. That's when kind of brought in a lot of like our creative writers and directors like Tim Bierbaum and Celeste Ballard and a whole bunch of the writers and creatives from the UCB community to kind of like work full time. And then that kind of became a little bit more of like an internally collaborative system where it was kind of like they got to kind of like come up with the ideas that they wanted to do, but then we kind of also had to like gear them more towards creating a brand. So like that kind of had more of a note process with like working with marketing and kind of like seeing like, yeah, internally, like what works well on YouTube, what the analytics are. So that was kind of a change that in the edit process was noticeable because we had to like build in like an extra day sometimes just to make sure we got marketing notes or we got more like business notes just to make sure we weren't kind of like doing anything that at that point we were selling stuff to international markets. So we didn't want to get too racy at that point anymore either. Not that we ever really were, but it just made it a lot easier to like put this stuff on YouTube and then also try and turn around and sell it to like another platform basically.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, but for you, did that change in mission or change in approach affect the process for you, or did I guess like you were there for a long time?
Yeah.
And the choice to leave was not necessarily something that you were, you know what I mean? You weren't like, I'm out, right. I'm on to the next thing. So I just mean like there must have been some continued growth for you to stay there, or like opportunity growth to keep building on. I guess I'm wondering like what was the evolution for you creatively inside?
So I think like for me creatively inside, because I was like editor number one, I got to work on a lot of the big projects right out of the gate.
Right.
And I was, you know, I mean, I was working with SNL talent like pretty much day one on a lot of this stuff. And over time, like there wasn't much of a growth to like the scope or scale of a lot of the projects that we were doing. I mean, we were, you know, targeting them in different ways and kind of like working with different outside creators. But, you know, I mean, I started doing 3-minute videos and I ended doing like 2.5-minute videos basically. Like, so it was all like, it kind of was mostly sort of like I got to work on some stuff that was like a little bit bigger over time. But I guess the change that I kind of really felt was it went kind of from being like more of a collaborative experience with like the writer and the director to then also kind of involving building like a relationship with like the like marketing department and like the business interests just who are trying to like build the brand and like make sure that we're kind of like we're also servicing that as well. And you know, the kind of projects that we were doing would change. We went from, you know, kind of just like the early days where it was kind of like, yeah, we just like working with this talent, let's give them some money to do it, to coming up with ideas where it's like repeatable, like sofa series kind of things, basically, where you have people sitting on a couch, like talking about movies they've never seen. Or, you know, we had Wingman, which was really fun for a little while, where we had Matt
and, eat hot wings,
and right? Yeah, we had Matt Muscovac and Andrew Ford, like sitting around eating wings and like these kind of series that were a lot more kind of like repeatable and kind of trying to come up with things that like had more of a pattern. So you did kind of get into a place where you were kind of like repeating a pattern on a regular basis rather than like, this thing is going to be, you know, like a crime noir, or this thing is going to be kind of like a sci-fi parody or something like that.
Did the output level change? Did it become more, I mean, you also scaled up, you went one editor to four. Did your workload get more intense?
Yeah.
As that change happened, or was it dispersed across more people?
It did. I mean, it kind of like, it would get more intense in spurts, and then we would like kind of like add someone. Like, we would kind of like grow to the point in post production until like it was unsustainable for anybody to kind of like be doing all those projects. And it's like, all right, we need to add another editor and then grow again to the point where it's like, all right, you know, like when we had, when the Kicker launched, like we had to bring on an editor specifically for the Kicker to kind of handle that workflow as well. So it kind of like, it kind of would go in spurts, I think. Like we would start with like a moderate amount and then we kind of just get to a pressure point and then have to like relieve it and then get to a pressure point again.
Yeah. You mentioned before too, like the part of the evolution there being working with like the marketing team. Mm-hmm. And definitely like the series that I did with you guys, I always felt like marketing was, you know, was a big part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that definitely is not the way that it works here.
Yeah, no.
But I guess like for you and maybe the nitty gritty of it, not necessarily as interesting, but like for you looking at it in the rearview mirror now, what are your takeaways about that evolution, about the piece of like working with a marketing department that informs your work as a creative now,
mm-hmm.
in a good way and in a bad way?
Yeah, I mean, it is helpful in a lot of ways because like you can kind of lose yourself in a creative project and not really be aware of like what needs to be done to make it successful, which is good and bad in a lot of ways. But, you know, above average is a business and like they need to grow and need to grow an audience. So, you know, they would come to us with ideas for how to do that. So, you know, that became part of the collaborative process where we were the creative side of things, or the creative like department would come up with ideas and we would go, it was kind of like a mix, I think. Like we would do some more creative projects and then we'd also do some more kind of like audience building sort of oriented projects. And, you know,
one for them, one for us.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's part of the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think too, there were a couple of videos where like we would make that would be a little long and we would be in edit, like we would be happy with them being long, but marketing would point out like, here's a thing that maybe doesn't perform as well in the video that we've kind of seen not perform well before.
Yeah.
Like, let's see if we can like change that or take it out to make it better. And I think there were definitely plenty of times where we would get notes that at least for the purposes of being a successful video on YouTube, like they were always like looking out for that. And you need that when you're trying to like build a brand like that you kind of want to compete with like larger comedy kind of like centric brands out there and video centric brands and everything.
Sure. Do you take any of that experience going forward in any way that informs the kind of projects that you want to make, or you know what I mean?
Like the marketing stuff
I guess so. Yeah. What do you take away from that?
Because
it's not like you can, it's not like creatively you want to give yourself over to just being like, I want to make something that's just marketable.
Yeah.
That's creatively just like stagnant.
Yeah.
No one wants to feel that way. I get that maybe some people do.
Yeah.
Whether they realize it or not, but you're not necessarily like looking to do that. But what do you take away from that influence, having seen the way that side of the business influenced like pure creative projects, now that you're in a place where you're like back to the hustle and like wanting to sort of like expand for yourself, like what do you take away from that experience to inform developing projects going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing that I kind of go for, especially when I have people who might approach me to direct like a web series or something like that, is to kind of go for the like 3 to 6 episodes. Let's do them all at the same time. Let's package them together and try and release them like on a week to week or at the same time. Like some kind of like plan for how to package them and release them a little bit. Just because, I mean, I've been involved in several web series projects where it's like, let's shoot one and then release it. And then we'll shoot another one and release it. And like, that's both difficult because it's hard to keep up interest online. I mean, there's so much. It's just like, it's just so hard to get people to follow that. And also, it just becomes difficult production wise too, because it's hard to get everyone in the same place at the same time again. And also like trying to keep things on the shorter side. I mean, you know, when you watch a video on YouTube, you are just kind of going there for like 2 or 3 minute videos, unless there's something really specific that you're interested in. But like trying to keep things on the shorter side, I think, are those are kind of the two bigger things that I think about when people ask me to work on projects with them.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
We're the hosts of Definitely Dying, the podcast that's a safe space for listeners and funny friends to talk openly about their medical dramas, both real and imagined.
We're part of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, with new episodes released every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you love to get your podcasts.
Stay healthy.
And then I guess the other question I had just about like the growth inside of that position mm-hmm. is you also mentioned sort of like doing some post supervision stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where I guess like maybe define it for people who aren't aware of the differentiation in those roles, right?
Yeah.
What's the value of a post supervisor on a project, especially in a short form world? It's definitely more common in long form
yeah.
to have a post supervisor. But yeah, what were you doing in that role that was different than an editor role, and what's the value that it adds to the project?
Yeah, I think in a short form world, when you're working as like a post production supervisor, your job mostly kind of becomes managing calendars, making sure that like expectations are met, but not you're not setting expectations too high, you know? I mean, like, when I was post-production supervisor, a lot of the times I would be the first person that would have to be consulted about doing something in post. And the way Above Average worked was like there were a couple different production units happening at the same time, both internally and externally. And, you know, part of what we did was a lot of our external shoots, you know, were also things that we would do post on internally. Like, you know, we did with Young Hillary. Like,
yeah.
You guys shot that separately of Above Average, but I did the post on that. And so it was just making sure that, like, that bandwidth was met and that there was a reasonable expectation for what that bandwidth was. So we wouldn't have, like, it would be easy to have two or three different like external projects kind of like shoot at the same time and then have all that show up on the same day and be like, these all have to be done in 3 weeks, and trying to just make sure that all that's getting coordinated and every project is getting the right amount of time and post that it needs and we're not rushing through anything. And then a lot of it was also just kind of like day-to-day troubleshooting of machines and stuff and making sure backups were getting run, making sure that media was getting copied over when it would come in, making sure that when a project was kind of like done, we were like wrapping it up, making sure all the assets were there before we put it all on LTO tape and then removed it from the server. So it's a lot of just kind of like overall post management rather than kind of specific, like, you know, I've done work as like an assistant editor on like SNL, and like post-production supervision there, it's kind of like making sure your mix is coming in at the right time and like making sure the graphics people are all kind of like on the same thing at the right time and kind of like really kind of coordinating a bunch of stuff all at the same time and making sure you have staff for certain things. A lot of it's freelance. This is a lot of just kind of more like office management kind of stuff, which is kind of why I did it for a little while and wanted to move back from it in that role, just because I felt my talents and my interest laid more in actually editing projects rather than kind of like overseeing them and making sure they were
sure.
done on time.
Yeah. No, that all makes sense. That's cool. But I mean, it is definitely like instructive as you're working
mm-hmm.
to be in the position where you're the natural person to become that role inside because mm-hmm. you've been part of the systems getting built up and have done enough of the, you know, especially in short form, it's like the repetition of it, like the reps make you better.
Yeah.
Right. And so like you're in a natural position to sort of be like, I can supervise this process now because naturally I have an idea of the way that this should be running mm-hmm. and can then help facilitate that. Whether or not you enjoy it
yeah.
is another question, which I've felt similarly on in projects. Like I've done it on a couple of things. And I'm like, okay, I did that. I don't necessarily like want to do this job all the time.
Yeah, but it's good to know. And it also, as an editor, I think makes you a better editor in terms of knowing where things are coming from, knowing where things are going.
Yeah.
I consider myself a very technically savvy editor.
Yeah.
And I've worked with editors before who are awesome at cutting. Their pacing is perfect. They know everything about how to cut something right. But technically, like, they don't know as much in terms of like what needs to be output, what needs to be what kind of formats and stuff like that.
Sure.
I think that kind of happens more with people who've been doing it for a long time and kind of have to jump from one system to the next, and it's kind of hard to keep up with that sometimes.
That's true.
But I think, and also as a freelancer, like I can often bring that information with me when I'm working on a project and like make sure like, let's make sure we get these kinds of hard drives. So that's going to make my life easier because they're faster and we can work on your 4K project and actually be able to play it back. So yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah, no, that's true. So, you know, you go through that growth process mm-hmm. and you were there for what, 6 years?
I was there for, I was with Broadway Video for, yeah, like 6 years, above average, like almost 5 years.
Okay. And obviously no longer there.
Right.
Now, look, you and I both, you know, have colleagues and friends who are still there. They mm-hmm. made some changes. We don't need to get into the whatever or as much as you want to or right. not want to. For you as a person and as a creative and mm-hmm. as somebody who's now like in the next phase of what's going on,
mm-hmm.
right? You were in the position where you weren't necessarily looking for the door at that moment, but the door sort of found you.
Mm-hmm.
What has the process been for you of exiting out of that environment with some grace and some contacts? And what has the process of going out into the world for freelancers the first time been for
yeah.
you?
I mean, you said, you mentioned reps a couple minutes ago, and I think that was one thing that I took for granted with my time there was the amount of reps I was getting in doing these projects. And about 2 years ago now, I put together my first, I never had like a portfolio website, and I was kind of getting to a point anyway where I was kind of like looking for new opportunities. So I started putting together a portfolio website, and I was like, holy crap, I forgot how many projects I've worked on. I forgot how many awesome projects I've worked on and how many awesome people are in those projects and how much great talent I've worked with. And I put together a reel. I mean, like, and I've got like so many like noticeable faces in my reel, which is great to have. Like people pick up on that. And like I got just so many reps in there that like I have been grateful that I have been able to hit the ground running in a pretty solid way leaving there because of that. And, you know, and I think that they have been helpful and supportive in trying to make connections and stuff, you know, and trying to put me in places where I can meet new people and set me up with kind of the people I want to talk to if they have those connections for finding new opportunities. I mean, I've been, I think it was probably March of this year, I started doing freelance assistant edit work at SNL, which is great to have on my resume. And it's a great environment to be in, and I've gotten to work with a lot of great editors.
Yeah.
And I've done a little bit of work with Comedy Central and like their marketing department, which kind of puts together their promos and stuff. And I made a couple connections with, a couple other like great shows and like production companies that, you know, they're all interested in working with me. I think the thing I keep reminding myself too about is like, a lot of it's about timing, you know? You meet a lot of people who really like your stuff and really want to work with you, but they don't have something for you to work on right now.
Sure.
So you just got to, like, keep in touch with them every, like, couple of months and be like, hey, I'm still here. Like, here's what I've done since we talked last. You know, if you have anything coming up, let me know. And it's been, you know, I've been booked pretty much completely since, I left. It was the end of March. I left the end of March. And I've been booked pretty solidly since, like, middle of April.
That's great.
So, yeah. And I've been in a bunch of different great places. And, like, I just think that I am grateful for having that time to kind of put together all this proven work and this, like, awesome reel so that when I have been going out for work, I don't have to fight for it as much. I have a lot of people who are excited to, like, bring me on for comedic editing because of that.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
You even mentioned being at SNL. So mm-hmm. you're still, like, that's That's right back in the family, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's where he started out as like an intern and kind of like what got me into the family. So, you know, it's been great and an honor to do assistant work there. You know, it's crazy hours sometimes. I've done a couple things there where, you know, I've worked a day shift on one gig from like 10 to like 6, and then I'll go work a night shift doing assistant work from like 8 to like 6 in the morning. So like I work almost 24 hours, but it's awesome. And, you know, it's exciting to work on projects where like no matter what, at like by 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, your thing's aired and it's done. And like it always looks good. It's always just like the production quality is amazing. And I mean, a lot of people don't realize this. Like a lot of those shoot like Friday. They shoot Friday and Friday night and they're done by like air on Saturday. It's a crazy post turnaround.
And wow.
Yeah, no one else in the business, I think, can do things as fastly as they can. So it's been great to like be able to like freelance with them like last season, and hopefully I'll be able to do some more freelance work with them again in the future.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of like where you're headed, has the majority of, because that's work and that's TV work,
mm-hmm.
but it's funny. It's like it's part of a TV show, but it's still a short form piece inside of a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Has the bulk of the work that's been coming down been inside of short form, or is there, and I guess like how much of that, I'm always curious too, because like you can now make a career in short form, which 10 years ago you'd be like, I'll do a little of it now, but like the long-term stability is not in this medium, right? But like now you can. Is that like something that you're interested in? Is that where you're headed?
Yeah, I mean, so far I think a lot of the work that I've been landing has been short form comedic work, either in the branded or the ad space. I'd like to try and make the transition more towards long form television. You know, I've been talking to people and doing the research, and you know, it's the way that it's kind of set up, it's tough to kind of like jump directly from being a short form editor to being a long form editor. You still have to kind of put in a little bit of time as like an assistant somewhere. So I'm kind of like looking for some opportunities to work as an assistant on a TV show. I mean, a lot of that too is not necessarily that they don't trust your chops as an editor, but a lot of it is like a lot of those shows have a system, you know, when you talked about systems before, and like they have a system with how they organize things, how the media is managed, and they want you to learn that first before they will have you actually edit a show. So I think that's kind of like where I'm trying to move to right now, you know. And in the meantime, I'm just picking up short form stuff just to kind of keep building out that reel and, you know, make money and to be able to afford living in New York City. And yeah, I mean, it's been great. I mean, you know, I've been lucky to kind of have land a bunch of awesome gigs with a bunch of awesome companies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing I will say, because I don't want to dwell on it, but the one thing I will say is, it like listening to you talk about the way that that place got built, it even surprises me more about that change. Because like the other thing about short form is that we just said, like, yeah, you can make a career in it, but also like as we've sort of been tracking on this show, the period of some of these startups, especially that go into the short form space, they fold a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have to jump between thing to thing. It definitely is unfortunate that that place has made that shift from what felt like it was like building jobs, you know what I mean, and mm-hmm. building something, and they've now made like kind of a change to be like, well, maybe this isn't a career long term for people, you know what I mean, and maybe it is a short term solution, a year and a half job opportunity for young people to get them started,
mm-hmm.
you know, But there definitely feels like there's a space going forward where you can work in short form, and if that's your expertise especially, you can really, like, nail it and do it for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for branded short form content, because that's what's happening on the web right now, is all these brands, it's becoming like television in a way. All these brands want to show off, and the way of doing that is instead of putting a banner ad on a website, They pay for like a 3-minute branded content piece from, you know, some new upstart news website that will go and like do a mini documentary on like Burger King or something like that and make them look good. I mean, like that's where a lot of the short form stuff is happening right now. And short form ads in general, because everything is moving towards video on the web. But I think, unfortunately, it seems like short form, pure entertainment short form stuff is not as viable as it was a couple of years ago. So a lot of it has kind of shifted more towards branded stuff. And it's tough to compete, too. I mean, like, when you have the option of sitting down and spending 30 minutes watching entertainment on your computer or on your phone or whatever, you could watch like 5 or 6 YouTube videos, or you could watch one of the like new series that like premiered on Netflix this week. Like there's just so much out there. It's just like, it's hard. I think that stuff makes it a little bit harder for the short form content to compete as well, just in terms of like pure like YouTube kind of entertainment.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. And it also seems like the models are changing.
We
didn't even talk about the way that like Facebook disrupted the whole model of the kind of content you guys were making. Right.
Yeah.
And like, and it also is like, from creatively, how do you start to come up with ideas that aren't just funny, but that are viable if somebody's not listening to it?
Yeah.
Like, whoever thought that would be our problem in 2017, that like, we need to make something that like somebody can like while also just reading the text on the screen. It's insane.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I've gotten to the age where, like, I have never gotten Snapchat. Like, I sort of get Instagram, but, like, that seems to change every 6 months. And, it's tough to... I think it's just, like, the tough thing about trying to do short-form content on the internet is the platforms you're on change all the time. They just always change, and it's hard to keep track with that sometimes. And it makes it tough to chase a little bit. But it's been great to, it's still a great place to, I think, get your reps in and, you know, get good at what you want to do, because it has, I mean, like I said, when I went to NYU, I focused a lot on editing as a talent that I could do, a skill that I could do to get a job, because I was worried. It's like, I'm going to film school. Like, you know, film school, jobs out of film school are hard to find. And I look around, and a lot of the people that I know who went to school all got jobs real quick, because there was so much short-form content out there when we graduated. And a lot of them, you know, are still doing it. A lot of them have moved up, and it's good to have that out there to try and get good at what you want to do and then try and make the move on from that. At least personally, that's what I'm trying to like look to do, I think.
Yeah. Well, excited to sort of see what's next for you and the stuff you're working on. And thanks so much for sitting down and taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Do it for episode number 58 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Ryan for sitting down and taking the time to chat. You can see his full portfolio of work at ryanspearsfilm.com. Thanks to you out there for listening to this show. We make this show because hopefully it's beneficial to you as a creator, a creative, and a filmmaker. And if you do find it beneficial, the nicest thing you could do for us is share this show with your friends. You can subscribe to this show, rate us, review us at itunes.com/UCB comedy. And you can connect with us directly. We're happy to chat and happy to sort of talk to you about filmmaking and the kind of stuff you'd like to hear on this show going forward. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UCB Digital. Instagram, too. We just joined Instagram.
Yeah.
Which we probably should have been on the whole time, because this is a visual filmmaking show.
Yeah. Maybe.
But that's also UCB Digital there as well. And you can connect with UCB Comedy, as we said, new Facebook Lives every single Wednesday at 2, Facebook/UCB Comedy. Weird, fun, interactive stuff every single week delivered to your feed. New videos on Vimeo and YouTube/Vimeo slash UCB Comedy as well. And UCB Comedy is all over the social media spectrum at
UCB Comedy. We'll be back next week with another new episode, our book club episode next week. So we hope you've read the book. If you haven't, the clock is ticking. Next Tuesday, we'll be out with that Maker Book Club episode, The Real Truth by Reed Martin. And thanks to the Bronx Beer for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. We'll be back next Tuesday. Until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.